Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The economic hardships of the response to COVID-19 are unavoidable for many. They lost jobs and paychecks, but the rent was still due. This puts renters and landlords in a predicament. The San Antonio City Council considered an intervention, but fell short by one vote. So where does this leave renters and landlords? And now that more people are getting back to work, they're going to start getting those paychecks again, can back rent be negotiated? Or are the evictions inevitable? And then how much is that going to cost us as a community? Are you faced with these tough choices? What are you doing to survive? Call in. We want to hear from you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at TPRSource. We're joined this hour by Roberto Trevino, District 1 San Antonio City Council Representative. Councilman Trevino, great to have you back.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Andy Segovia is the San Antonio City Attorney, and he joins us. Attorney Segovia, good to have you, sir.
Thank you, David. Good to be here as well.
Also with us is Lizbeth Parra-Davila, an attorney with the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. And Lizbeth Parra-Davila, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So, Roberto Trevino, you fell short by one vote on this proposition that you were in favor of. Were you surprised by that outcome? Did you think you had the votes?
I think that I can say that we're not all, we don't count votes, but we certainly talk to our council colleagues and try to present them with as many of the facts as possible. And, this is certainly impacting our entire city, but in many cases, there's certain parts of our city that impacts it more. And so I am surprised that we didn't get the outcome that we had hoped to receive. This is, as we saw, an important issue we brought up way back in March. It's been going through the process as a potential CCR, but we accelerated that to try to get the vote done. We were appreciative of the fact that it did get to a vote in May, but unfortunately we weren't successful.
Tell me what this proposal would have done. I keep hearing the right to cure as a phrase describing what this is, and that the cure has nothing to do with COVID-19. That's a phrase that has to do with contract law, allowing individuals who have come and breached a contract to somehow to become back in to repair the contract. So this is an opportunity to allow people who fell behind on their rent to catch up, right?
That's correct. Like you pointed out, it's a technical term. The bottom line is that we as a city, public officials, asked the community to stay home, to help flatten the curve. And they followed that. They followed our advice. They helped to flatten the curve. And so this would have been a show of support for all those that have done just that. Half of our community rents, which is why we've been pushing for a renter's commission for about a year now, and want to acknowledge the fact that a lot of our vulnerable populations are renters. And so we saw that this is going to be something that would help provide some protections. It didn't resolve any issues regarding the responsibility of people to have to pay rent, but just gave them the time to catch up, gave them the time to, as you noted, to cure that rent. And so that's exactly what this proposal was about. We're in a state of emergency. I can't think of any more important time to stand up for our community the way we tried to do. I realize that that there was some concerns that our city attorney brought up legally, but I see this as also certainly a moral issue. We have the responsibility, the obligation to stand up for our community when they need us the most.
All right, so let's go to the San Antonio City Attorney, Andy Segovia. If you could explain what are the concerns, the liability that the city would have if this had passed?
Well, David, the exact risk in terms of what the city would face. We talked to the council about that in executive session in terms of what the obvious merits are of some of the arguments, what some of the weaknesses may be in some of the arguments. So that's still attorney-client privilege. What I can say, though, is that clearly what's been publicly stated is that many of the organizations that oppose the ordinance were pointing at preemption by state law and perhaps certain violations of the Texas Constitution in terms of an illegal taking. So the risk in terms of what the potential claims would be were pretty public, but then we discussed with counsel what the obvious merits weaknesses of these various arguments are. And obviously some council members weighed that and considered those potential legal risk as part of their decision, but a lot of them also considered policy reasons as well.
Now, when you say an illegal taking, that means that the government just can't seize property from individuals or...
That's correct.
And it has to be a due process, and you have to pay for it. This is a fundamental thing in our form of government. And so just like we say, if you can't afford food at the store, you just don't get to go in and take whatever you want. Just because you don't have money doesn't mean give you an entitlement to those food items. Just because you can't pay rent doesn't mean you get to stay in someone's property without paying rent, right?
That's correct, and there is arguments obviously to be made. If the ordinance had passed, obviously we would be in a position we would staunchly defend it. But you're right in terms of identifying the issue is that if there is a trier of fact or if there's a judge that determines it was a takings, yes, then the city would be liable for not only the ordinance maybe going away, but also for money damages as well.
Elizabeth Parra Davila, I'm going to go to Elizabeth Parra Davila, attorney with the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, to kind of give the counter argument.
Yes, yeah, so other cities in our service area did pass to the one that San Antonio attempted to pass. Today is the day that the Supreme Court's moratorium expires, and we're really focusing on reaching as many residents as possible. So this ordinance didn't pass. There are people who will be evicted.
You know, Elizabeth, we're not on a very good line, so what we're going to do is we're going to hang up and we're going to try to call you back and see if we can get that straightened out when we return. We're going to be coming up on a break really quick, but the point that she made, Attorney Segovia, city attorney, other cities have passed this.
That's correct, David, and we have similar ordinances in Austin and Dallas. I think some organizations raise legal concerns. They have not been sued yet. I say yet because there's still that opportunity for someone to do that. And if they were to be sued, it would probably most likely occur after some of these moratoriums have been lifted, particularly by the Texas Supreme Court. Because then you would have landlords which would open the window for them to start the eviction proceedings.
Right. So the holdup has been the Texas Supreme Court put a moratorium on evictions, but this is a temporary fix. No one knew at the time what we were looking at with the economic fallout from the response to coronavirus. Now that's coming into focus. We're realizing we're in for a long haul here, and people have a lot of bills to pay. Landlords have bills to pay too. So we definitely want to hear from both sides in this discussion today. Both sides are facing tough choices, and we also have to think about what's best for our community. We're still in a pandemic. What's going to happen to these individuals if they do get thrown out of their apartments and homes? Where are they going to go? How can they stay safe from the coronavirus? How do they not become a vector for the entire community as well? We're going to be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We really do want to hear from landlords or individuals who have fallen behind on the rent due to the COVID-19 response. Was the place that you worked at, you know, they got shut down, you got your hours cut. Were you a part of all that and now you've got to pay rent? How are you going to make that all work out? If you get thrown out, where are you going to go? We have to think about that as well. And so the number again, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255, from Portia on Facebook. This is not right. Many people haven't been able to go back to work and get unemployment yet. And so the stimulus checks haven't been sent to everyone who's eligible. This could hurt so many people. We should be protecting renters who were furloughed or laid off. Let me go to Roberto Trevino, District 1 City, San Antonio City Council Representative. That's kind of, Portia's kind of echoing what you're, where you're coming from, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And again, it was asserted earlier that there's potentially a lawsuit, and other communities are facing a lawsuit. I want to point out that Austin's Apartment Association registered as neutral on this item when they passed it in Austin. San Marcos's regulation is up to 90 days. I just think that there's a lot of inconsistencies in what's being said. I also want to point out that we pointed out the fact that there is in the property code a section that says if the lease or applicable law requires the landlord to give a tenant an opportunity to respond to a notice of proposed eviction, a notice to vacate may not be given until the period provided for the tenant to respond to the eviction notice has expired. That's the basis of which we apply this right to cure ordinance. And, as Portia was saying, it's just not right, and I think we need to do everything that we can to stand up for our community. Of course, is there always going to be an opportunity for people to sue the city on anything that it votes on? Of course, this is what we face weekly, and I think that this is really just setting up a bad precedent when it comes to people threatening to sue the city when it's trying to do the right thing by its community.
Well, I mean, the thing is, this failed to pass. We could try to relitigate the whole ordinance argument one way or the other, but it did fail to pass. So this is where we are right now. And are you going to try and bring it back to council? I mean, this ship has sailed pretty much, right, Councilman Trevino?
Well, actually, we did ask the mayor. There's a section, another thing that the mayor could do today in the emergency response. We asked the mayor to extend a moratorium on notices to vacate, which could be helpful. And this is part of an email we sent months ago regarding this whole issue. I mean, bottom line is we're trying to find ways to protect renters who are facing these problems. There isn't any one silver bullet, but what I'd like for us to do is to explore every possible way that we can provide more protections during this crisis. This is the time to do these kinds of ordinances.
So Andy Segovia, San Antonio City Attorney, can the mayor accomplish pretty much the same objective by fiat with emergency order?
Well, this is the first time hearing that the mayor was considering that. Obviously, we'll have to have a look at what the mayor would be considering and what that would entail in terms of simply implementing the 60-day as the ordinance outlined it, or if it's something different. So we'll have to discuss that with the mayor. And see what exactly he's considering doing, but it would have probably some legal risk associated to it, very similar to the ones we explained to council with respect to the ordinance,
and also some political risk where he could risk ostracizing some of his sometime allies on the council as well. Let's go to Joshua on the phones. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. Joshua, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. My question is, how is it that we can lift moratorium on rent when the homeowners themselves have protections against their mortgage, when also the reason that the renters cannot afford their rent because the government mandated quarantine?
Okay, Joshua, thank you for that. So how can we force people without income to pay rent when they don't have it? Let's go back to Andy Segovia. I mean, is there the fact that people can't pay rent, and the fact that some people got some protections for their mortgage, does that enter into the fact that they don't have the money? Does that enter into the legal argument here?
Absolutely, it would enter into the legal argument, David. It would be one where, had the council passed the ordinance, obviously we would be arguing that, given the situation, this COVID-19, which really no one foresaw, we're dealing with a situation where many tenants don't have the ability to pay because the government mandated that they stay at home, or they declared their employment sites as non-essential. So, I understand that it impacts a lot of individuals, and they had no control over that. But at the same time, as a city or state exercises its emergency powers, there are still constraints on it when it comes to constitutional parameters and when it comes to intervening into contracts between private parties.
And you have to, if the city declares everyone has to stay home, restaurants closed, bars closed, gyms closed, people lose their jobs, and then they don't pay their rent, and then the city says, well, you can't toss them out, then the city has a responsibility to make those landlords whole, doesn't it, Roberto Trevino?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point you're making, which is a few weeks ago, we increased our risk mitigation fund to one of the highest, I believe, in the country, to $25 million to essentially address this. The county also joined in to help in similar ways, to help with rent, with food, with utility payments. And we talked about getting more money for a risk mitigation fund that could do just that. So this was essentially a combination of policies that was going to help address that very issue. And yes, the city was going to provide some assistance. This is the Right to Cure was essentially asking for time. The risk mitigation fund is the source of funding. We thought that was going to be a good combination. Unfortunately, it fell short, did not get staff recommendation to pass. And I think that was very critical in us getting the passing votes.
Right. I want to focus on that. So the distinction is, you're not telling people that they get to live in someone's apartment for free without paying a rent. You're just making some provisions so that people, if they fell behind, that they could catch up. And that's the concept. So the rent money still will be paid, they just need to figure out a way to make that happen. Is that it?
That is correct. And, you know, we researched that there's 13 financial institutions, banking institutions that provide relief to landlords, to property owners, to extend, their ability to also pay. So we feel like this is in that same spirit.
So all right. So I want to get to Elizabeth property. Is back with us. Elizabeth Pata Davila, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. They've been a powerful voice trying to advocate for people who have who could be evicted. So, Elizabeth, if you could give us a capsulization of your argument.
So other cities in our service area did pass similar policies to the one that San Antonio attempted to pass. Today is the day that the Supreme Court's moratorium expires. And since it has not passed the ordinance here in San Antonio, there are several people who will be at risk of eviction. There's a lot of things out there that are very confusing for tenants to understand. And already there have been many lockouts in San Antonio and people receiving notices to vacate even when the moratorium was in effect. And so that puts renters in a very vulnerable position right now. And we are trying to get as much information out there as possible for them.
All right. I'll make another caller. This is Bruce. Bruce, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks, David. Listen, I think you just touched on something that my concern is that the city, if they really care about their citizens, rather than passing this ordinance to forgive rent or to delay rent, why doesn't the city just pick up and pay the full rent for these tenants for the next several months until the thing settles down? I think it's erroneous to believe that tenants are going to be able to pay several months of back rent, July, August, September, whenever things settle back down, they go back to work. They're not going to be able to. The landlord is going to end up suffering more than anyone. Why doesn't the city just go ahead and make the payments? And then if they want to collect from the renters, then they can, rather than putting the onus upon the landowner or the property owner.
All right, Bruce, thank you for that. Roberto Trevino, y'all have set up that fund. Those are grants, but could you do loans?
I think we can explore something like that. The grants, the risk mitigation fund is set up to help those that are most need. I want to point out that the first report we got back, 57% of the folks utilizing the risk mitigation fund were earning less than 10% of the AMI. That means they were earning less than $7,700 a year. This just really highlights the incredible need in our own community. And I would also just disagree that to compare, one suffering more than other. Somebody who loses their home is a very traumatic event. And I think it's very difficult to compare, who's going to suffer more in this situation. The right to cure policy was really meant to help provide time for everybody to cure that rent, and make sure that we can help make everybody whole.
Rhoda is on the phones. Let me get her on the air. Rhoda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I think it's so sad that the focus has to be on money rather than personal loss, but I think that sharing needs to happen. I have a tenant, and she works and only gets paid when she works and has not been able to work. So I said, don't worry about the rent. Pay me when you can. Pay me what you can. She's been here for like 15 years. I'm not gonna evict her. Who would I be if I did that? This is where we all need to go. Now, in terms of the city, it's a lot harder to create laws that just involve the city because everything trickles out. And we just need to reevaluate. Yes, we are a city. We are a healthy city. I mean, healthy economically, and we need to take care of our people.
Rhoda, thank you so much for calling in. We sure do appreciate that. And really quickly, can I get your reaction to that? Roberto Trevino, District 1 council member.
We're really grateful for landlords like that. Again, it highlights that this is not a landlord versus renter issue. This is about how all of us are going to try to get out of this together. And so providing that framework, I think, helps to provide a roadmap. You mentioned early in the intro that, federally backed properties do have protections, but that leaves 50% of all renters in San Antonio exposed to no protections whatsoever. Why is it that the federal government can see that there's opportunities to extend the time limit or put a moratorium on evictions and leave out a huge part of our population? That's what the city was trying to do. It's unfortunate that we did lose the vote, but again, it's not a landlord versus renter issue.
So real quickly, Councilman Trevino, how can people get help from the city with this fund that you've mentioned?
Well, contact Neighborhood and Housing Services, and we created the Risk Mitigation Fund. It's going fast.
How much is left?
I want to say less than half of the risk mitigation, the $25 million is left. It's going at about an average of $500,000 a day. We know that we're going to have a discussion on council regarding the $270 million that we are getting from the federal government to replenish those risk mitigation funds. But without having policies that can help sort of extend the time frame, it could end up costing us even more money because we didn't provide that framework.
All right. So where is this leading? Are we going to end up with many, many people who are homeless, living in their vehicles, living in tents under bridges? We're talking about families. We're talking about people who have been working hard, who've been part of our society, paying taxes, doing all the right thing. And now they just got caught behind the COVID-19 eight ball. Or can we help them through this patch so that we don't end up hollowing out part of the working class of San Antonio? What are some actionable solutions? And also, we're going to be hearing more from landlords coming back. The number is 833-877-8255. The Source continues. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about evictions and COVID-19. What are some ways that we can slow down the evictions, try to halt them, still at the same time help landlords who have their own financial burdens as well that they have to, they can't ignore those either. So how do we balance that out? We're now joined by Terry Bilby, Executive Director of the San Antonio Apartment Association. Terry, welcome to The Source. It's good to have you. If you could tell me, what are you giving some sort of guidelines to apartments, landlords, about what to do with tenants who are unable to pay their rent at this time?
Hi, David. Thank you. I'm glad to be here as well. And thank you for having this very important conversation. We've been from the beginning at calling for everyone to work together. We've been asking rental housing providers to work with their residents to proactively communicate, to waive late fees, to work with them to come up with payment plans, restructuring lease agreements, to allow for a longer payout period. We've been asking for this all along, and we continue to ask landlords to do that.
When someone falls behind on their rent, it's not just the back rent that has to be paid, but typically there are fines and penalties that accrue as well. Is that true?
True. However, during this time, we have been calling for rental housing providers to consider waiving those late fees, and again, to find ways to help folks get those payment arrangements made, providing them with resources to get assistance when they need it.
And so are these apartments, are they responding? I'm sure you're having a dialogue with these apartment owners. And what are they saying? Is saying, well, you know, we can do that or we can't do that?
We've had a great response to this call. We are hearing from our members particularly that they are doing lots of creative ways to help people through this difficult time. And keeping in mind, they're on the front lines too. They are going in to make sure that the maintenance is done and all of the things that have to happen so that residents can have a comfortable and safe home. And they've told us they're doing things like providing food pantries and food deliveries and doing forgivable loans. They are coming up with all kinds of creative ways to help people through this difficult time. And the reaction we've had from our members has been very positive. We've even had rental housing providers that are not our members reaching out to us and asking how they can help and you know, where the resources are that they can get to their residents so that they know where to go to get help.
Being evicted, I mean, there are going to be people who are unable to pay their rent, and there are going to be some landlords who are unable to work out deals, and people are going to be evicted. Now, being evicted often means that you're going to be get a black mark on your name that will follow you around for quite a while, particularly when you try to rent someplace else. But if you're a person who's always been a very good tenant, you've always paid your rent on time, you've never trashed your apartment when you moved out, you've been a model in person that you would want to rent to, are they still going to get that horrible mark on their name and make it rough for them to find a new place to live when times turn around?
Well, first of all, if someone is a model tenant who has always paid their rent on time, has always communicated, I don't believe those folks are going to be evicted. Landlords everywhere are trying to find ways to help their residents stay in place. You know, they need their paying renters as much as their, you know, renters need apartments and need homes. So those folks, I believe, are going to find certainly that their landlords want to help them through that difficult time.
Will they be able to, I mean, how do you negotiate that? How do we communicate that this person was evicted because of COVID-19 and not because they refused to pay their rent?
Well, the first point is to start communicating before eviction even takes place. It's very important that residents communicate with their manager, with their landlord, let them know their situation so that some sort of arrangement can be made. That's the most important thing to do. So we've been calling all along and asking folks to make sure that you're communicating with your manager and letting them know your situation. No manager, no landlord wants to evict someone who has who's lost their job, been furloughed, had their hours reduced due to COVID-19 or for any reason for that matter, but certainly during this difficult time. And they are providing them with links. They're helping them fill out applications for rental assistance. They're helping them fill out their unemployment assistance applications. Property managers have become de facto social workers trying to help their residents find all the different ways to, you know, put the puzzle pieces together to help them get through this difficult time.
And finally, if the city council vote had gone differently and it would have been 6-5 and this ordinance Right to Cure would have passed, what would that have meant to the San Antonio Apartment Association?
The San Antonio Apartment Association would have had to go back and discuss with our leadership what this means to the rental housing industry. Our concern is to make sure that people have a place to live, that people have choices when it comes to where they want to live. And we want to protect rental housing for everyone. And that's to protect housing, again, for everyone in our community. So we would have been having a different conversation at our board meeting this week than we are having. And it certainly could have led down the path to litigation, which is not something that we wanted to do. But we felt very strongly that the ordinance that was proposed is unconstitutional, and that we would have had to take steps to protect rental housing.
All right, Terry Bilby, thank you so much for joining us and giving us the voice of apartment owners. So you're the executive director of the San Antonio Apartment Association. Thanks for joining us here on The Source. And now we're going to bring in the voice of Erica Heisel, president of the San Antonio Property Owners Alliance. And Erica, it seemed like there was an organized effort to inform the city council that many property owners in San Antonio were not happy with this proposed ordinance, the Right to Cure. Did y'all organize and try to, what was your message?
Yes, thank you for having me, Dave. We are a volunteer-run, unfunded group that organized around the Renters Commission messaging back in March. And we are owner managers, so we are small businesses that own our own rental units, and then we manage them for ourselves. So we don't use a licensed real estate agent. And most of my members have very small margins. I alone paid 43% just to property taxes. Our only safety net is the eviction process. It is something that is our constitutional right and is really the only thing that we have to incentivize the tenant to pay. Property taxes are the backbone of Texas. They pay for schools, county hospitals, and our town, the San Antonio River Authority. If the landlord can't incentivize the tenant to pay, then how will the landlord pay property taxes? So I think this is a domino effect, and a lot of attention is being paid to corporate landlords when actually 50% of America are our members who own less than 10 units. And our mom and pop individuals, some of them even still hold the property in their individual name. We're trying to educate them that that's probably not the best idea, but we were asking council to govern and not politic. And we don't see any data in the ordinance. Given that a lot of attention has been paid to mortgages, when I checked on my own homestead mortgage, they would forbear it for 90 days and ask me for a balloon at the end of 90. Most of these landlords, if they do get a loan, they are not owner occupants. They get them as an investor, and they don't have those same safety nets that everybody's hearing about in the news for homestead owner occupants. So we just wanted to organize and make sure that policy was to govern, not to politic, and that we actually, if we can't collect rent and there's no safety net for that, and our only safety net is the eviction process, then we will not be able to pay property taxes. We will not be able to pay loans. If we have loans on that, the mortgage companies, wherever they end up being based, are going to foreclose on it. So actually, the domino effect will be more landlords in the street. So I know that San Antonio actually had a decrease of almost 20% of homeless from 10 years ago. There are less than 3,000 people a day on the street in homeless without a home. So we want to make sure that there's data and not fear. I just, as a background, my first career was as a housing counselor with HUD certified agencies that brought me to Texas. I worked for a national nonprofit on that. And the number one thing we did with our clients was a budget.
Okay.
If they could not afford the home, we did a budget, and there's no accountability for renters. Not even a budget is making them accountable.
Now, we have about a minute left. So the idea here is looking at the big picture and long-term economic turmoil that we face. And if we have renters who can't afford to rent, and that becomes a domino effect, as you mentioned, then rent and owners are not going to be able to find renters, and you're going to lose those properties anyway. So the idea is maybe do a little bit now, ask owners like yourself to take a haircut, keep people in property so you will be able to find people who can keep, so that you can pay their rent eventually. Does that work for you or does that make sense? Does that seem proper?
We have. For 10 weeks, we have taken a haircut. We have done partial payments. We have waived late fees. We've done all of those things. What we're not considering as a community effect is that if you don't evict the people that can't afford the renter and find them a more affordable place, you're not protecting the people that are also downsizing because they lost their job. One of my tenants broke her lease. She lost her retail job. And I said, well, the city's giving out money. She said, I don't know how long it's going to be. I don't know when I'm going to get employed again. Let's just have me move out. She moved in with a friend. The person that I just rented it to was a retired Army person downsizing from a $1,725 house.
I'm up against the clock, Eric. Thank you so much for being a participant. You brought a great voice to the conversation. We're taking a break. The number is 833-877-8255. Be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about evictions. We're going to have a lot of them here in San Antonio and COVID-19, and that is the cause of this economic turmoil. It's harsh for landlords. It's harsh for renters. It's harsh for everyone in this economy, and we're looking for some solutions and some dollars to even it all out. So Roberto Trevino, District 1 San Antonio City Council member, can you give me your reaction to what you heard from the San Antonio Apartment Association and San Antonio Property Owners Alliance?
Well, I think that, again, for the most part, this is not a landlord's versus renter's issue. And by far, there's a lot of landlords that are doing everything they can. There's so many stories that apply, but there's a lot of people who simply aren't. We only have to go back a couple of weeks with the Almost Club Apartments, who is not a member of the Apartment Association. We were reminded of that, but did receive Federal CARES Act money and still locked 50 people out of their apartments. There are just so many individual stories that my office gets called on. I even got a call from a realtor who was given a notice to vacate, even though there's a moratorium on evictions. And is reaching out because they understand that this is just a very unique time. And I think that, nobody wants anybody to go through a hardship, but I think that there's just some inaccuracies about the kinds of help that is available. As I mentioned, we found 13 financial institutions. Literally, you can find them on their website saying that they're providing relief and support for those who own investment properties. Those things align very much with what we're saying, which is about giving people time to catch up on their rent. We have many people who are living paycheck to paycheck. And so to imagine that something like this is going to impact them and not affect them in such a traumatic way is just really not seeing the big picture.
People living paycheck to paycheck, and there ain't no more paychecks. So what do you do? Elizabeth Pata Davila, attorney with the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. What does that person do?
So unless a tenant is protected by a local ordinance or the CARES Act, landlords must start the eviction process with a notice to vacate. Texas law requires at least 3 days notice to vacate unless the lease says otherwise. But that does not mean that the tenant has to move. However, if they don't, the landlord can still file an eviction case with the local justice of the peace. Once the lawsuit is filed, the justice of the peace will schedule a hearing, and if a tenant loses, they have up to 5 calendar days to move or appeal. This includes weekends and holidays. So they have the right to request a jury and also the right to appeal the case to county court.
The justice of the peace, they're not going to begin to hear these until June 1st, I believe, here in Bexar County. Andy Segovia, does that mean essentially till June 1st there's no evictions?
That's correct. At least I hear for the state is that the JP courts, I'm sorry, for the county, the JP courts have said that they're going to have that moratorium on eviction proceedings until June 1. As was noted earlier, the Supreme Court, Texas Supreme Court moratorium is lifted today. But one important caveat to that, David, is that they are now requiring that when a landlord goes to an eviction proceeding, he has to establish, or that person has to establish, that their tenant is not covered under the CARES Act, which I think is a positive in terms of making sure that those that are covered under the CARES Act moratorium do indeed get the benefit of that protection.
All right, let me go back to the callers. We have Brady. Brady, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I own a dozen single-family rental units in San Antonio, and renting is basically just simply a symbiotic relationship between a tenant and a property owner. It is not in the tenant's interest to lose a decent tenant. It's my or the property owner's interest to lose a decent tenant. This knee-jerk political reaction that's going on is not solving any problems. If they want to start solving problems, they need to do two things. First, my taxes just went up 30%. That's going to get passed along to the tenant. Our county needs to step up and limit tax increases to 10% this year. Also, city council needs to...
All right, Brady, I mean, I'm sorry we lost you there, but he was emphasizing the fact that, you know, having a renter and having property owners, landlords who are responsible, working together is a good thing for the community. And this is how we need to be looking moving forward. Let's go to Mike on the phones. Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, you know, I'll build on that same concept a little bit. A lot of landlords, I'm a landlord, live mortgage to mortgage payment. You know, we collect rent to pay the mortgage, and maybe make a little profit, course. So if your tenants don't have to pay you, you end up foreclosed. The property is going to get foreclosed on. You're going to try to sell it. It's going to lead to lower real estate prices. Could possibly lead to abandoned properties. We can be creating a whole new community problem here. If you have a whole apartment complex that goes under and people are boarding up the doors, you've got a huge problem for that neighborhood. So this is the solution is not to take all the tools away from the landlord. I try to work with my tenants, but taking the right to remove a tenant that hadn't paid their rent in a few months is not a good thing.
Right. So, Mike, if your tenants can't afford to pay the rent, what does that do for you?
Well, what I'm doing right now, fortunately for me, all of my tenants but one have been able to pay the rent. And what I've told the tenant that can't pay the rent is I said, pay as much as you can. I can carry you for a little while, but pay as much as you can each month, and we'll work it out down the road. But do as much as you can, because I can't carry you forever.
So Roberto Trevino, District 1 City Council member, where is this headed? Since we don't have the right to cure ordinance, which if failed to pass, and you're going to be looking for other solutions, because this could cause a domino effect in the local economy if people can't stay in their apartments, houses.
That's correct, and I think what we're facing is a huge unknown, and you know we were simply trying to provide a framework, and then the previous caller, I mean, really exemplified the whole point of a right to cure program, which is some people can pay part of the rent or pay it over time, and that's the spirit in which we were trying to provide that framework. We will be looking for other ways to help people. Property taxes came up. I want to point out that I sent a letter to the governor, asking the governor, who's the only person who can actually do this, is to freeze property taxes for this year, because unfortunately, what people are going to see in this year's property tax bill is going to be outrageous. Property taxes are going up, but that's because by state law, they have to be the values have to be taken as of January 1st of that year. It can't be any other time period. We know that this crisis has affected property values, and so it's going to create a huge bottleneck at the appraisal district with regards to protests. And, of course, again, renters in the state of Texas have absolutely no protections when it comes to property taxes. So property taxes can go up as high as 35%, and we have some examples in San Antonio where they will.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. And so
That's going to be an avalanche day when those letters go out. Let me go to Dirk on the phone. Dirk, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that, you know, I've heard a lot of stuff from landlords and from, you know, the apartment association saying that landlords are like symbiotic members of the community and, you know, trying to work with people. I just want to say what I got from my landlord was a letter that said, you know, we're all in this together. But by the way, if you can't pay rent, contact us and we'll prepare your eviction papers. You know, I get excuses for maintenance. I got, you know, it's really not, I don't see that at all. So I pay $1,000 a month for the ability to live in this place. I can't control that. I need space, you know, and you know, it is a landlord versus tenant issue, because it's a question of resources. The state is basically saying they're not loosening austerity, not by any reasonable measure. So the question is, somebody has to take the cost. Either the tenant gets evicted or the landlord doesn't get their money. And the question is, do you want to evict, you know, a nurse, a fast food worker, somebody like that? Or do you want to, you know, come down on somebody who owns houses for a living and taxes people for the need to have a space?
Dirk, are you going to get evicted?
Me? No, thankfully. I have an essential job.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. So, Roberto Trevino, I want to know what's going to happen to all these people who lose their homes, who lose their apartments. Where are they going to go?
That is the hardest question to answer, and we increased our risk mitigation fund because we know that there's a lot of people that are experiencing very, very difficult issues. We've seen the photographs of all the lines at the food bank for people who are simply just looking for food. You know, in a time when we're asking people to not be fearful, to have confidence in their municipality, in their government, throwing in a big unknown like this only adds to the fear, and it's not something that we want to happen. But we should be thinking right now that housing is health care, and all our policies should follow that principle, from evictions to property taxes.
Sure. Elizabeth Pata Davila with Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. Are we tracking what's happening to individuals? Are we going to have data to show that what is going on? Really quick.
Yes, we do have a couple of systems that are tracking this. And we actually developed a map that renters can go to search if they live in any of the properties covered under the CARES Act for additional information. And right now we are still accepting, like, if anybody has any questions or needs legal assistance, our hotline is still available. And you can also apply online for our legal services.
Give me the hotline. What's the hotline?
888-988-9996. And online, our application is live at trala.org.
Right. If you fall behind in your rent, find out, first of all, if you are federally protected. About half of places are. That's step number one. Elizabeth Pata Davila, thank you so much for joining us. Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, Roberto Trevino, District 1, San Antonio City Council, and Andy Segovia, the city attorney for the city of San Antonio. Thank you so much for joining us as well. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.